this hour, we'll be hearing excerpts from the Intelligence Squared U.S. debate that took place at Asia Society in New York City on the evening of February 12, 2008. This series of debates is sponsored by the Rosenkranz Foundation, and the proposition this time is America should be the world's policeman. The audience was polled before and after the event, and the entry poll recorded the audience as only 24% in favor of the motion, while 44% were against, and a whopping 32% were undecided. Later, we'll hear how the audience voted after the arguments. The moderator for the night was veteran 60 Minutes news correspondent Morley Safer. We'll hear from him later, but now we'll sample a few of the ideas presented in the opening statements. The first speaker of the night was Max Boot. He's a senior fellow in national security studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and he is speaking for the motion.
Why should America take on the thankless task of policing the globe? To answer that question, start by asking, does the world need a policeman? That's like asking whether New York City needs a police force. As long as evil exists, someone will have to protect peaceful people from predators. The international system is no different in this regard from your own neighborhood, except that predators abroad are far more dangerous than ordinary robbers, rapists, and murderers. Without an effective police force, the world community would fall apart faster and more completely than New York City did in the 1970s. There are, to be sure, lots of international laws on the books prohibiting genocide, landmines, biological weapons, and other nasty things. But without enforcement mechanisms, they are as worthless as the Kellogg-Briand Pact, which outlawed war as an instrument of national policy 11 years before the Wehrmacht rolled into Poland. The hope of idealistic liberals for more than a century has been that some international organization would punish the wicked. But the League of Nations was a dismal failure, and the UN is not much better. So who does that leave to be the world's policeman? Belgium? Bolivia? Burkina Faso? Bangladesh? I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's the country with the most vibrant economy, the most fervent devotion to liberty, and the most powerful military. And yes, there is a cost to be paid for action, as we've learned in Iraq, but there is also a cost to be paid for inaction. During the 1990s, we ignored our policing responsibilities in Afghanistan. As the civil war raged between the Taliban and the Northern Alliance, our leaders said, in essence, what Britain's leaders said in the 1930s, that there was no reason to be concerned about a quarrel in a faraway country between people of whom we know nothing. Well, on 9/11, we found out why we should care. The answer can be seen a few miles from here, where the World Trade Center once stood. We need to play a proactive role. We need to police areas of unrest and to do what we can to bring decent government to war-torn lands. If we fail to...
Next, speaking against the motion, we'll hear from Ellen Lapson. She's president and CEO of the Henry L. Stimson Center.
Americans, for the most part, do want to be active on the world stage. But we can do good in the world, and we can benefit as a society from active engagement in the world without being the world's policeman. So I oppose this motion, and I hope you will agree with me, for several reasons. First, let's take some practical reasons. The U.S. is a country, not a global government. We have to know our limits. The United States should use force when it's in our interest, just like every other country has to make existential decisions about the use of force and about war and peace. Do we want to assume responsibility to go anywhere, anytime? A second practical argument is that we can't do it. And here I mean both in terms of quantity and quality. Quantity, guess how many of the 11,000 police who are currently deployed worldwide in UN operations are American? Out of 11,000, 291 are U.S. policemen. And they are in Kosovo and Haiti, principally. So the U.S. has not provided robust manpower from our police forces. We've also learned that the way we train our policemen in a federal system is not all that well suited to the requirements for police in a lot of peace operations post-conflict. And then let's ask literally, are we capable of doing the job? Can we be the beat cop? Do we know the neighborhood? Do we speak the language? Do we know the culture so that we can diffuse conflict before it breaks into violence? I'm not so sure about that. I think today we have a particular problem trying to assert that we could or should be the world's policeman. We have overused our global leadership role. We have abused, in a way, the goodwill of the international community by deciding that we knew better than anyone else how to bring security to dangerous parts of the world, and it turned out we weren't as good at it as we thought we would be. We have not necessarily made at least Iraq and Afghanistan more secure or more stable. This is not the moment to reassert the policeman's role.
That was an excerpt of Ellen Lapson's opening statement, and here she is again being questioned by Morley Safer.
You talk about engagement, but in the case of Iran, when the other side really has no interest in engagement, or North Korea has no interest in engagement, we can be out there engaging all we want, and nobody's accepting the ring.
Well, I think the North Korea and Iran cases are a category that's a little bit different than the requirement for a policeman. But both of those problems are being managed with, you know, international cooperation. And even if the United States didn't want to engage initially with North Korea and still today with Iran, the reality is we have found interlocutors to engage with both. And that progress has been made in the six-party talks with North Korea. I certainly agree with you that engagement alone is not necessarily sufficient. There are circumstances in which coercive diplomacy, sanctions, there are other instruments of international politics that can be exercised. But I would argue that at least under today's circumstances, Iran has many policies that we do not like, but it is not playing the role of a belligerent that requires a military action right now.
Now, back to opening statements. Here's Douglas Murray. He's the director of the Center for Social Cohesion, and he is speaking for the motion, America should be the world's policeman.
When we talk about the world's policeman, a lot of people summon up the idea of force and that you have the right to do it because you're powerful. I don't think that is what the reason is that America has the right to be and should continue to be as it currently is the world's policeman. It's not your force as a nation which I think allows you that right. It's America's virtues that allow it that right. It's the fact that when America goes into a country like Afghanistan or Iraq, you don't do the things which previous great powers did. When you go into a country like Iraq, you don't say, how long can we stay here, but how soon can we get out? You want to dabble as little as possible in the world. I think that's a virtue. You know when you have to intervene, but you also know when you have to get out. Let me cite one example of where the virtue of American intervention is not only necessary but vital, and I'd cite the case of Kosovo. When the concentration camps in Europe reopened in the 1990s in the Balkans, and when we saw an ethnic genocide, an ethnic cleansing from a third-rate tin pot dictator, and the European governments couldn't stop it, who was it who had to step in? It wasn't France. France provided us with a phalanx of lawyers and a leak. America provided us with 98% of the air power, and they stopped a genocide. That's no small achievement, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody says that it's good being the world's policeman. Nobody says it's enjoyable. Nobody would want the job, other than people who you wouldn't want to have the job. You can look in your papers any day and see what the rise of China would bring in its wake if you wanted them to police the world. Look at the athletes, for instance, going to the Olympics, being attempting to be forbidden from speaking out. You want a perpetual silencing like that across the globe? You don't see America.
That's Douglas Murray, and here's another question from moderator Morley Safer.
Mr. Murray, you talk about Afghanistan and Iraq, two places that have no interest in democracy, no record of human rights. These are tribal wars going on in both countries, and certainly in Afghanistan, where they managed to resist. What on earth can this cop on the beat, this American cop on the beat, do in a place like either Afghanistan or Iraq?
Well, I'll tell you
other than stay there forever?
Sure. Well, I can tell you one thing it can do and has done straight away, which is that Afghanistan is no longer a base where there are open training camps where terrorists can train and come and attack cities like this one we're sitting in.
And the heroin business...
I don't think that's a small achievement.
And the heroin business is booming.
I think that's a different question.
So with the cops out there, what's he doing?
Well, hang on. If you let me finish. Look, as I say, it's no small thing to get the first thing done, the thing that was originally why America and her allies went into Afghanistan, which was to take out flagrant training camps of terrorists. And that job has been done. Now, it seems to me that the job of sorting out the Afghan economy is a separate one, one which the world community generally is involved in. But I think that's a different point. I don't know if you want to try to make me an apologist for the American administration or spokesperson for them, but I'm not.
Well,
my own
like
my own view, for what it's worth on it, is that the job of creating a viable booming economy in Afghanistan is a quite different one. Now, this particular policeman went in and sorted out the problem. It doesn't also have to be the Social Services Department.
Now, speaking against the motion, here's Ian Bremmer. He's president of the Eurasia Group, and we'll hear an excerpt of his opening statement.
The first is, I fully agree with the notion that the world desperately needs leadership. We are in a situation where global architecture is not catching up to the radical change in geopolitical shift. The United States doesn't have the lifting power it used to. China's growing like crazy. Energy is increasingly coming from unstable parts of the world. Don't even get me started on climate change. Lord knows you need a leader to move the system in a direction that we will all be able to live more secure, more prosperous lives. I do believe the United States needs to fill as much of that void as possible. The United States needs to be a global leader. I think a policeman is a very different fact on the ground. Look, when we talk about a policeman, I think about enforcement. I don't think we have the political will in this country. I don't think we have the political capital in this country. And I think trying to argue that we do risks a growth of anti-Americanism abroad, but more importantly and more dangerously, it risks a rise of protectionism in the United States. It risks a rise of neo-isolationism in the United States. Look at the Pew polls. Look at how Americans increasingly feel about support for free trade. Look at how they increasingly feel about whether or not they believe America is benefited from the way the world system is evolving. They don't. Part of the reason they don't.
These are excerpts from a live Intelligence Squared debate. We return now to Ian Bremmer's opening statement. He's against the motion, and he's speaking about the difficulty of acting as a police force in Iran and North Korea.
Military support. How about North Korea? The United States said, if the North Koreans develop a nuclear weapon, we are going to be very, very angry. And the North Koreans tested a nuclear weapon. And you know what? The anger in Washington was palpable. But we didn't do anything. And we went back to the Chinese, and the Chinese said, we told you, you don't have a military option. Sanctions aren't going to work. Now let's sit down at the table and work with them. The United States said, yeah, you're right. Okay, we'll sit down and we'll talk to you. At the end of the day, I'd love to be in a position where the Americans could be the global policeman on Iran and North Korea. It would be a better system. It'd be a safer system. But we can't do it. And the more we try to do it by ourselves in that role, the more incapable we're going to be. Okay, two final
questions. And here's another question from moderator Morley Safer.
Ian Bremmer, you talk about a leader, a Führer out there, someone who's going to suddenly have the world bowing down and saying, we want to follow you, leader, whoever that may be. What single leader is the world going to follow? America can't follow a single leader.
Well, historically, that's certainly true. America can't follow a single leader. But in terms of values and regimes, when we talk about, for example, free trade, the fact is we have an international system that the United States has been at the forefront of and has been pushing. Whether we're talking about international norms and regimes or whether we're talking about regional bilateral ones, that's been an extremely important process. The WTO, the World Trade Organization, the United States has played a leadership role. The U.S. is the world's largest economy, has helped to smooth and create many, many efficiencies. If you want to talk about what happened after the Soviet Union collapsed, if you want to talk about the efforts to denuclearize places like Belarus and Kazakhstan and Ukraine, the U.S. took a leadership role. That clearly made the world a more safe place. That's very different from talking about being the world's policeman. I think that there are a lot of countries that do criticize when the U.S. doesn't take a leadership role. Look at the tsunami in Indonesia. The Chinese put $4 million on the ground about a week afterwards. The United States got the Japanese, the Indians, and the Australians together, billions of dollars, in this case, boots on the ground providing humanitarian assistance, and actually made a serious difference. The United States is clearly indispensable in these roles as a leader, but I would not say that the U.S. has the capacity to be the global policeman.
We'll now hear excerpts of two more opening statements. Here's Michael Mandelbaum. He's professor of American foreign policy at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. He's speaking for the motion, America should be the world's policeman, and he's rebutting three objections the idea often faces.
One objection is that the United States does not carry out its policing duties as well as it should. Every police force is subject to criticism, legitimate criticism, but criticizing a police force is not the same thing as arguing that there should not be one. A second objection to the motion is that it would be better if global policing were carried out not by the United States, but by other countries or groups of countries or international organizations. There is no other country or group of countries that is willing or able to take up the burden of global policing. And as for international organizations, they are far too feeble to do so, and that emphatically includes the international organization to which some would like to assign the task of global policing, the United Nations. So the alternative to the United States as the world's policeman is not a better international order, it is more international disorder. Well, a third objection is, what about Iraq? Well, the American military operations in Iraq really have two parts. The first part involved removing a tyrannical government and ensuring that neither it nor a tyrannical successor would possess weapons of mass destruction. The second part of the operation involves trying to construct a stable, decent, democratic government in that country. The first task, which falls within the purview of global policing, was successfully accomplished. The second has not been done so successfully, but the second task is not an example of police work, it's an example of social work. The United States is not good at social work, but it doesn't have to be to perform as the world's police force. So,
now we'll hear from Matthew Parrish. He's an author and former member of Parliament in Britain. He's reflecting here on the history of British imperialism, and he's speaking against the motion.
In the 1960s, what happens when any one nation tries to assert coercively its predominance over the rest of the world is that other nations begin to gang up against them. And in that case, the United States was part of the group that ganged up against the British Empire. It might be fair, it might not be fair, but it will always happen. Finally, I don't think that Americans want to police the world. I don't think that Americans are isolationist. I think that on occasions, America has to intervene abroad, has to respond, has to defend herself. But I think it's in the instincts of the American people to demand of their statesmen that reasons are given for that. There will never be a long-standing will among the American people for international intervention. You think your argument faces a tough test before an audience of internationalist New Yorkers. It's out there in the sticks among the right where it will finally founder. I know those people. I represented them in England. They are conservatives. You, Max, Douglas, and your cartload of doctrine and theory are not. I beg to oppose the motion.
Now, we'll hear a section of the debate when the debaters question their opponents. Here's Max Boot questioning Matthew Parrish, whom we just heard.
Instead, I would like to ask about your fascinating claim that you have great knowledge and power to intuit the feelings of the American people, which is denied to those of us who actually live here. And I would like to ask you, therefore, why you claim that the American people will not support this role of global policemen if, in fact, they have supported American troops being stationed in East Asia and Europe for over 60 years, and why you think that Republican and conservative voters in particular do not support an interventionist role for the United States when they consistently back presidents and presidential candidates such as Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and John McCain are, in fact, leading advocates of intervention abroad.
I must remind the panelists that these are questions, not speeches.
Well, of course, I know a great deal less of the American people than almost everybody else on the panel. I only have the hunches that I get from those whom I know and the time that I spent here. And my impression, and I may be wrong, is that there's a good patriotic spirit in America for invasions of foreign countries where those invasions can be seen as palpably in the national interest in order to defend America from people abroad. But that there isn't the same interest in administering other countries, there isn't the same interest in prolonged occupations, and that it's only as long as America is winning in those circumstances that public opinion remains positive. It quite quickly turns against when conditions seem to be becoming adverse.
Ellen Leibson, who do you have a question for?
I'd like to ask Michael Mandelbaum to tell us how he would get to the end state that he desires of the U.S. as the world's policeman. What would you do? You spoke very disparagingly of the U.N. What would you do with the 17 current peace missions that the United States has supported by its vote authorizing on the Security Council, the 100,000 soldiers and policemen that are deployed worldwide in these trouble spots? Is it your view that those operations should simply be shut down and go away?
Not at all. I'm delighted with them. I think we should have more of them. I think the United States should support them. But they add up to only a small fraction of the policing that's necessary in the world. In East Asia, contrary to what Mr. Bremer said, the United States does a very effective job of containing, although not preventing, the acquisition of nuclear weapons by North Korea with the Seventh Fleet, with its security treaties with Japan and South Korea. Without them, East Asia would be a much more dangerous place. Similarly, in the Persian Gulf, although the United States has not dealt with complete success with Iran, our military presence over the horizon and our naval presence assures the free flow of petroleum, which is a global necessity. A policeman walks the beat. The United States does that in the Persian Gulf and in East Asia. It's extremely important that it do so. To the extent that other countries can chip in, all the better. But they just don't do enough, and I don't have any expectation that they will.
That was Michael Mandelbaum, and he is speaking for the motion, America should be the world's policeman. Here he is again, asking a question of Matthew Parrish.
I would say in response to your comment about American opposition. It's a question. We thought we could do it better than you did, but we were wrong. Come back. We would be delighted for the British to do more by way of global policing. So will you, as an influential member of the political class in Britain, commit to agitating in favor of the Royal Navy growing larger rather than smaller so that it can resume the policing of the Atlantic and the Mediterranean that it did so well and so necessarily and with such great benefit to everyone in the 19th century.
You suggest that you or the Americans have learnt that imperialism, indeed British imperialism, was a better thing than you thought it was at the time. I would say that we British have learnt that imperialism was not as good a thing as we thought that it was at the time, that there is a limit to the extent that a country that has no economic global predominance can continue to police large sections of the globe. We learnt that to our very great cost. It's a lesson that we've learnt, and I think we're not going to unlearn it, and if we have any advice for you, it is not to repeat the mistake.
Matthew Parrish, do you have a question for someone here?
Yes. Again, it's to Mr. Mandelbaum. I'd like you to deal with the question of legitimacy. A policeman in New York works for an authority that is elected, enforces laws which have been enacted by people who have been elected, and is in many ways of the community that he polices. America as world policeman would be a very different kind of animal. There would be no such presumed consent. There's a real problem about legitimacy,
please, sir.
About authority, and I wonder how you answer that problem.
I answer it as follows. The United States, as the global policeman, is not as legitimate as the New York City police force is. And it cannot be because there is no global government, no global state to give it legitimacy. But it has enough legitimacy because nobody opposes it, as they would if they didn't like it and felt threatened by it. Indeed, there is a threat to the American role as the world's government, but it doesn't come from other countries. It comes from the mounting costs of social welfare, of our entitlement programs. The great threat to the American role as the world's policeman and to global order comes not from China. It comes from Medicare.
Mr. Murray.
I don't have any lack of questions for the other side, but the one I'd most like to ask is Ian Bremmer, who mentioned, my ears pricked up, about the Pew polls, about what people across the globe think of America. And aside from the vaguely unpleasant sight of anyone caring that much about how much they're liked, I wonder if you've seen the Pew polls about people who are in favor of suicide bombing as a tactic across the Arab and Muslim world, particularly legitimizing vast percentages the murder of Israelis, and whether you've seen the Pew polls that show the number of people across the Middle East and elsewhere, the huge numbers of people who think that, for instance, 9/11 was a conspiracy forced on the American people by their own government, by Mossad and all this sort of thing. Based on all this, do you think that this is all America's fault, or do you think other people have agency and the ability to cock up?
No, I certainly don't think this is all America's fault. I think I pretty much said I like the idea of the United States being the world's policeman. We just can't get there. It's generally a kind of country I'd probably enjoy. Again, I'd like the idea of having a private plane, but it's not happening tomorrow. You know, I would say that you're referring to the wrong Pew polls in terms of my comment. It wasn't about how much countries like America. It's about how much Americans actually support globalization, how much they support free trade. Americans have proven to be less pro-globalization, less pro-free trade than the Russians, the Chinese, and the Indians. And that shows something very disturbing, in my view, which is that increasingly the average American does not believe that they benefit from the trajectory that the world is moving towards. And that not only speaks against growing opposition to the United States serving as the world's policeman, but it also speaks against the United States serving the role as a leader on key issues where international leadership is lacking. And I really fear that we will throw the baby out with the bathwater on this one.
Ian Bremmer, you have a question.
Yes, I do. And I'm going to ask either Max or Douglas if they want to take it. It follows on this issue of legitimacy and the notion that, you know, countries, that all countries around the world kind of like the idea of a U.S. as a policeman. And I'm wondering, what do we do in those big issues where it's clear that they don't? You know, what do we do about Russia, where clearly, whether we're talking about Chechnya or Georgia or Ukraine, the Orange Revolution, the rest, the Russians really assertively don't want the United States to be a policeman. What do we do in a place like Taiwan, where the Chinese really assertively and increasingly have the power to stop the U.S., don't want the U.S. to act as global policemen? And I'm asking out of actual legitimate curiosity, how do we deal with those sorts of challenges?
Well, I guess I would reply that's a little bit like asking, well, what do we do about the fact that John Gotti doesn't like the NYPD in his neighborhood? Well, you have to deal with those issues, and sometimes you have to deal with them diplomatically. And obviously, nobody's suggesting that we start a war with Russia or China because we dislike some of their behavior. But the problem with the position that your side takes, which is multilateralism, is that basically you hold us hostage to the views of a Russia or a China. You basically say we cannot act by leading a coalition of the willing. We cannot act with our posse. We have to wait for some multilateral institution before we can do something. And of course, Russia and China have vetoes in the most powerful multilateral institution that exists. And they use their vetoes to shield wrongdoers such as Iran developing nuclear weapons, or to try to prevent us from intervening, for example, in Kosovo to stop the genocide. So if you pay too much heed to the opinions of countries like Russia or China or other dictatorships which don't have the best interests, our best interests at heart or the world's best interests at heart, basically you allow the world's worst criminals free reign. And that's something I don't think we can afford to let happen.
I'd like to open the Q&A up to the audience now. Any questions?
Over here. I have a question for Mr. Bremmer. You adduce a nuclear North Korea as an example of a failed police work. Is that the case?
Inability of the United States to act, not failed police work, just the U.S. doesn't have the capacity to act as a policeman in the case of North Korea, yes.
My understanding is that Madeleine Albright went over, Jimmy Carter went over, flattered Kim Jong-il, then he went nuclear. If you're aware of some other non-diplomatic means that were employed and failed, would you please share them with us?
Look, I mean, I'm not trying to argue. I think Morley raised the same point in a question to Ellen, which is that, oh, well, engagement clearly doesn't work with Iran because the Iranians don't want to be engaged. I'm with you. The Iranians don't want to be engaged. They're moving. They're going nuclear. The North Koreans didn't want to be engaged. I mean, criminy. They don't want pro-globalization. You throw CNN in North Korea, you know, probably Kim Jong-il falls relatively quickly. They want to keep the place isolated. They want to build their nukes. They want to buy people off. They want to blackmail. They want to sell drugs. They want to sell ballistic missiles. They want to engage in human trade. This is a nasty, brutish, and quite short regime. And I don't expect that any of the United States policies were likely to work. My point was the Chinese have a lot more leverage over North Korea than the United States does. There was no military option. You attack North Korea to try to stop them, South Korea is devastated within 36 hours because of artillery, if you look at geography. So that wasn't an option. Even the most ardent opponents in the Defense Department were trying to go there. So given the fact that you don't like the regime, given you don't want them to develop the nukes, you want to stop them, the United States has to think about who has the power, and it's not just the U.S. You've got to go to the Chinese, who actually are providing these guys with the lifeline economically, and say, we need to work with you. That's not the U.S. asking as the global policeman. That's America in a more multilateral role trying to cajole relatively recalcitrant countries to do their best.
I'm Robert Siegel, and this is an Intelligence Squared U.S. debate on the motion, America should be the world's policeman. The moderator for the debate was Morley Safer. Here's another question from the audience.
And the question is, how do you be the policeman if you don't longer have predominance? Like the English Empire lost its role as master of the world when it lost economic predominance after the First World War. So the question is, what can we be done without the predominance?
Michael Mandelbaum?
The United States can continue to act as the world's policeman as long as serious countries do not actively oppose it. And that means that since there is no longer a Cold War, it is in many ways cheaper for the United States to carry out the legitimate police functions in the world that it does carry out. And it carries them out with the sufferance, with the tacit agreement of major countries, including Russia and China, that disagree with the United States on some important issues, but still value the American role, at least to the extent that they do not oppose it.
Any questions?
There are a lot of nasty conflicts in the world at any given time. So this is a question for those who support the motion. What's the criteria for the United States intervene as policemen? Would that include Kenya today? Would that include Darfur? Would that include Rwanda in the early 90s?
Excellent question. Who wants to field it?
Max Boot.
Well, I don't think that you can come up with any hard and fast criteria. I think a lot of what you do has to be really based on a realistic assessment of your capabilities at the moment. And nobody suggests that, for example, if you have some murders occurring in New York City, that therefore the New York Police Department is a complete failure. Obviously, there are going to be crimes occurring in the world. We cannot stop all of them. It's beyond our means. Everybody will admit that. But I think we have to do what we can. Today, obviously, our forces are engaged in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we don't have the capability to intervene, as many, including me, would like, in places like Darfur. And that's a sad, tragic reality, which means that hundreds of thousands of people are dying. But, of course, even if we don't have the capability to lead an intervention with massive use of force, we can do other things, such as using our global leadership role to push economic sanctions or to provide enablers that might allow others to intervene. But, unfortunately, for all the talk from the other side about how there's so many others out there willing to play this global policing role, what we find time and time again is in very few cases anybody willing to step forward where the United States does not lead. And I'm in favor of American leadership while recognizing the limits of our power and the fact that we cannot possibly intervene in every case. I think we should try to do as much good as possible within the bounds of our power.
There was Douglas Murray.
Just put in quickly, there's a good quote here from Mr. Blair, our former premier in Britain. Before the Iraq War, Mr. Blair was asked by a journalist why he was going for nuclear conflict, and he said, it's a very important phrase, and I absolutely agree with it. He said, "People, I get fed up when people say to me, why not? the Burmese lot. Why not Mugabe? He said, I don't because I can't, but when you can, you should.
We have time for two more questions, brief ones, please.
The question is for the proponents of the motion. Would any of you advocate the institution of a military draft to provide the power that would be necessary to be the world policeman on a scale that would fit the needs of the problems that are going to arise in the foreseeable future?
Michael Mandelbaum.
I don't think a draft would solve the problem. And, of course, the military doesn't want a draft. And the United States carries out its policing role without a huge mass army of the kind that great powers fielded until the last third of the 20th century.
Can I just jump in and just make
Max
one
Boot.
Point? Because I think in your question and some of the others, I kind of sent this notion of American declinism in the air and the fact that we're woe is us, we're overstretched, we can't do everything that we want to do. And I think you should be aware of just how vast our power is. The fact is that we spend more than the rest of the world or as much as the rest of the world combined on defense, and we're still spending only 4% of our GDP, which is several percentage points less than we were spending during the Cold War. We still have the world's largest and richest economy. We've been creating jobs at a pace that outclips any other industrialized economy over the last 20 or 30 years. There are vast pools of power and resources in the United States that can be mobilized for the tasks that we have to undertake. And in fact, we have mobilized them in essentially policing the world over the last 60 years. It is a very doable mission.
One more question.
I have a question over here. I'm getting more and more confused as this discussion goes on what the difference is between policing the world and actually using the military to go to war. And the two seem to be discussed along with each other. And I think they're very different issues.
Douglas Murray.
The policing issue doesn't, first of all, it does not have to be only military. Just because we're saying on this side that we would like America to be the world's policeman does not mean we're suggesting that it is like the British Empire was or that it's like any other empire. I don't think it is an empire. Being a policeman is quite different. The issue of, for instance, sustaining an operation, remaining in a country and all these sort of things is not what we are talking about as policing. That policing operations are not only not welfare operations, but are also not imperialist operations, and not even operations which people might think of sustaining for long term.
If I could just, now,
you're listening to an IQ Squared debate on the proposition America should be the world's policeman. We'll now hear excerpts of the closing statements. Each speaker has 2 minutes, and they alternate between the two sides. We'll start with Ellen Lapson speaking against
Thanks,
the motion.
I admire the optimism of the other side that America's power remains preeminent and will continue to be, and they have been somewhat selective in their metrics or their use of factual information. I do think that we have some serious questions about the capacity to spread our military and civilian forces thinner around the world. One only needs to listen to military commanders' concerns about recruitment, retention, the cost of medical care to our soldiers, et cetera, to realize that, you know, there are limits to our ability to serve this function, and I think there is both an ethical and a political argument of why not share it with others. I've heard the other side say, oh, we like allies. Allies are fine. But they still believe that the essential decision-making authority of deciding when to act and where to act resides in the United States. And I just don't think that's the way the world works anymore. I really do believe that while the United States remains a country of exceptional wealth, talent, et cetera, and I deeply hope we remain so indefinitely, we should be aware of a redistribution of talent, capacity in the international system, and we should embrace this and turn it into a virtue. We should not be afraid of it, we should not be threatened by it, and we should not think that the United States alone has a monopoly on wisdom about how to respond to the world's trouble spots. And for me, one of the strongest arguments of this discussion tonight has been legitimacy. Michael conceded that we would have less legitimacy than the New York police, but that other countries so far haven't pushed back. I think that's not a permanent state of affairs. If we believe truly in democratic values, and I know we do, legitimacy should matter a lot. We should care more what other countries think and what their preferences are for finding the best solution to the world's policemen. Thank you.
Max Boot, you're next.
Well, I'd like to begin by addressing the question that was just asked because I think it's an important point. And by no means do those of us on this side advocate waging perpetual war. In fact, What I believe is that if America takes seriously its global policing responsibilities, that makes war less likely, not more likely. When you think simply about what an urban police force does, for example, cops on the beat walk the beat. They don't fire their guns very often, and the more they're out there, the more they have a presence, the more they deter crime, and the less likely it is that criminals will prey on innocent people. And they can have their greatest effect simply with the same kind of street corner presence that we expect here in New York City. And that's essentially what the United States has been doing around the world for more than 60 years, where our Navy keeps the Straits of Hormuz open. They patrol the world's ocean to prevent pirates or other predators from disrupting the flow of global commerce. Mm-hmm. Our troops are stationed in countries like Japan and South Korea and Germany and elsewhere to deter conflict from occurring. And all you have to do to realize why this is a good thing is just to imagine the consequences of a world without American leadership. I mean, imagine arms races spiraling out of control in East Asia and Europe. Imagine Iran closing the Straits of Hormuz. Imagine chaos and civil war spilling over the borders of Iraq and Afghanistan into neighboring states. Imagine terrorists getting their hands on nuclear weapons. Now, you may think I'm being melodramatic, but in fact, I think history shows the dire consequences of America abdicating its global policing role. And if even 10% or a third of the things that I'm talking about are likely to happen if we give up this policing function, it's an unacceptable risk. We have to continue in order to prevent the very wars that all of us decry.
Matthew Paris.
Well, I'm becoming more and more confused listening to Max Boot as to whether the United States can or can't afford this role. In one breath, he says they can, and then challenged over Africa, he says they can't. That quote from Tony Blair that Douglas Murray gave us was thoroughly disingenuous. I don't because I can't. Britain is perfectly capable of toppling Mugabe's regime in Zimbabwe. The United States is perfectly capable of instigating free and fair elections in Kenya. Britain and the United States together could do something about Darfur. They don't. And the reason that they don't, I believe, is that there is no coherent view on the part of the Allies as to what the role of world's policemen would be or where the world's policemen would police. And I believe that one of the reasons there's no coherent view is American democracy. I don't think the American people are really into this kind of thing. I don't think the American people really want this role. If they did, there would have been much more discussion as to how it should be imposed. Secondly, multilateralism. Are they in favour of it or are they against it on the other side? Max Boot seemed to speak very disparagingly about multilateralism. Mr. Mandelbaum spoke about the feebleness of the United Nations. One of the reasons for the feebleness of the United Nations is that countries like America and to some extent Britain have not entirely supported the United Nations. There's lots of things wrong with the United Nations, but one of them is there is no feeling that the United States any longer really wants to make the United Nations a driving multilateral force. Douglas Murray spoke about policing not really meaning the assertion of force. He seemed to call up a vision of an American world policeman as a kind of world marriage guidance counselor or world social worker or world priest.
I must ask you to wrap it up.
Or rabbi, I will wrap up. America has two great weapons. One is force and the other is persuasion, the power of moral persuasion. They are not complementary. The more force is used, the more the power of moral persuasion will be undermined. And I would urge you to oppose the motion and to support the idea of moral persuasion and not the use of force.
Michael Mandelbaum.
Some people in New York, possibly including some people in this room, are unhappy. The New York Police Department can't help you. Morley Safer noted that despite the presence of NATO forces, and incidentally, if you want to see just what America's allies are willing to do in a cause with which they agree, check out their performance in Afghanistan. It's pretty pathetic. Despite Morley Safer has noted that drugs are still traded. They're still traded in New York within a few blocks of here. That's not an argument against New York having a police force. And what is true of New York is true of the world as well. The fact that the United States cannot bring Chechnya to a successful resolution is not an argument against the United States acting as the world's police force. The job of a police force in the world, as in New York, is not to make things perfect, it's to keep things from becoming worse. And that the United States does in the world in two important ways.
by its military deployments and alliances that undergird globalization, and by leading the effort against nuclear proliferation and deterring rogue states if and when they get nuclear weapons. Those are important global tasks. They are the tasks of global policing. Other countries and other organizations have shown no inclination to do them. Therefore, it is in everybody's interest that the United States continue to do so. That is why you should support this motion.
Ian Bremmer.
We brought up a number of times the notion that nobody else wants to be the global policeman, so the United States has to step up for the job. I agree. Nobody else wants to be the world's policeman. Lots of people want to be their own region's and their own neighborhood's policeman. Some of them, thankfully, are incapable, like Venezuela. Some of them are increasingly capable, like China in Asia and like Russia in Eurasia. And the United States has to recognize that. They have to recognize that the extraordinary shift in importance of alliances and the importance in the battles of the hearts of minds, not of the individual people in these countries, but of the leaders that have to support this policing role to provide legitimacy, is not only assured by the world's largest military, but also by the world's largest trade flows, but also by the influence in these countries. And we're seeing that in terms of China's extraordinary influence in Latin America, which is growing by the second, in Africa, by Russia, in Eurasia, and the rest. The United States is going to have to learn to live with this. Look, it's true that a lot of Americans are unhappy. They're unhappy because of subprime. They're unhappy because of recession. They're unhappy because of energy insecurity. They're unhappy because of Iraq. And increasingly, they're unhappy because the bailout that's coming isn't like the U.S. government with the SNL crisis. The bailout that's happening with the big blue chips right now is coming from China and the Gulf and the rest. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We don't want Americans that are increasingly insecure to say the U.S. shouldn't play a leadership role. Look, every debate needs a theme. For me, this theme is that the great should never be the enemy of the good. Okay? Now, I'm an American, and I'd love to have the great, but I tell you, I'd take what I can get.
Douglas Murray.
Thank you. I'd like to start off by mentioning something Ellen Lapson said, that she said sometime earlier that the rest of the world is providing the actual police. And one of the reasons why that may be the case is because you, as a nation, are the ones that are doing the heavy lifting. It's not hard for Canada or somebody to not be able to provide troops, but to be able to provide policemen. It's not hard for Germany to send legions of people to Afghanistan who won't fire a gun. You can find those people. Who are you going to call? This is the question that we should have in our minds. When something goes wrong, when a tsunami occurs, when a massive humanitarian catastrophe like that, when a rogue state emerges, when a failed state becomes an even more failed state or a successful one starts to fail, who are you going to call? Is it going to be another nation state, or is it going to be the UN? Matthew Paris mentioned the UN. The idea of the UN policing the world is like saying that you just pick a cross-section of every household in New York and say that that house will do the policing, and that one and that one. In other words, an entirely random process, which will mean you'll get a certain amount of people who are fine, but you won't get the driven people, you won't get the people who are prepared to do the job, who are trained to do the job, who are financed to do the job. You'll get some people who can do it accidentally. You'll also get some bums and some lazy guys and some guys who are just wicked and others, and that's what the UN is composed of, is a whole group of people who you would give moral legitimacy for the simple fact that they're there. You can police the world. You should not be. It looks extremely bad to look like you're desperately wanting to be loved by the rest of the world as well. You will be blamed when you're the world's most powerful nation. You will be blamed when you intervene, and you will be blamed when you don't. You will just have to put up with that. And when the other side says that the great should not be the enemy of the good, I don't think anyone on this side would be or has implied that it would be, but the great should certainly be the enemy of the bad.
And that concludes our debate. When the audience had finished voting on the proposition, America should be the world's policeman, the results were 47% for the motion, up considerably from 24% at the beginning, 48% against, which was up only slightly from 44% at the beginning, and 5% were still undecided. So while those against the motion did win in both polls, it must be noted that those for the motion swayed much of the audience to their side. To hear the full unedited version of this or other debates in the IQ Squared series, or to subscribe to our podcast, visit npr.org/intelligencesquared. The Intelligence Squared U.S. Debate Series is an initiative of the Rosenkranz Foundation, Chairman Robert Rosenkranz, Executive Producer Dana Wolf. For more information about this series, visit www.iq2us.org. That's IQ, the numeral 2, US.org. The goal of Intelligence Squared U.S. is to raise the level of public discourse in American life and to recognize that on most contentious issues, both sides have intellectually respectable views. This series is produced for radio by WNYC in New York, producer Rob Christensen, senior producer Ellen Horn. The recording was engineered by Damon Whittemore, Edward Haber, and Sean Roberts. Intelligence Squared U.S. is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.